From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy, broadcasting this week from Monroe, Louisiana. Well, folks, we made it. This week's show marks 10 years since the nationwide launch of State of Belief on January 15, 2006, on the Air America Radio Network. Some regular listeners may be thinking, enough already with all this celebrating. But in truth, there have been several times when the continued existence of this program was very much in doubt. As in, we could not see any way forward. And yet each time, fate or friends or fortune intervened, and as a result, we've never missed a show in an entire decade. Listener support has played a crucial role in keeping us on the air. If you've made a donation to State of Belief this week, I want to say a very personal, special thank you. And especially at this anniversary moment, I want to strongly encourage every single listener to pitch in, to visit stateofbelief.com and to make a tax-deductible contribution. You know, there is no other show quite like this one on the radio. So, for goodness sakes, let's keep it going on the air in the year ahead. Our website, once again, is stateofbelief.com. Now, here's what's coming up on this week's show.
And that's why we need to reject any politics that targets people because of race or religion. This is not a matter of political correctness. This is a matter of understanding just what it is that makes us strong. Our diversity and our openness and the way we respect every faith.
The reality of diverse religious faiths, misrepresentation of minority religions, hostility toward atheists and humanists, demands for adherence to specific dogmas in the political arena, all of these are going to be a part of the political campaign season of 2016. Like it or not, that's reality. As we prepare to address the violations of church-state separation as well as the culture war rhetoric that is inevitably going to present itself in the months ahead, I'll talk with Interfaith Alliance Executive Director, Rabbi Jack Moline.
Religion and radio done differently. From Air America Radio in New York, here's your host, the Reverend Welton Gaddy.
Welcome, everyone. It's Sunday, January 15th, and this is State of Belief on Air America Radio. The politics of religion, the religion of politics, and other things you're not supposed to talk about in polite company. It's been 10 years since I first spoke those words on the radio. We were all so much younger then, weren't we? As we celebrate the 10th anniversary of State of Belief this week, we'll have a reunion of the key players that helped get us on the air in January 2006, Thaler Pekar and Isaac Davey Aronson. But first...
And that's the way it is.
There's simply no way to mark 10 years of State of Belief Radio without once again saluting the late Walter Cronkite. When Interfaith Alliance was born in 1994... The Christian Coalition was on the rise, creating a powerful coalition of religious and political conservatives that many of us deeply felt was as unconstitutional attempt to subvert democracy itself as we had ever seen. A number of prominent leaders had allied themselves with that conservative movement, and they were expert at using media to promote their exclusionary message. So even as the idea of an interfaith alliance drew many prominent religious and secular activists together around the idea of protecting faith and freedom for all Americans, we desperately needed a face that was both recognizable and trusted. And we got that when the most trusted man in America, former longtime CBS News anchor Walter Cronkite, gave us both his endorsement and his participation. It shouldn't be a surprise, then, that from the beginning we understood how vitally important mass media was in our ambitious work. And on January 15th, 2006, we launched State of Belief, a one-hour weekly radio program distributed nationwide on the Air America Radio Network. It should also be no surprise that my guest on that very first show was Walter Cronkite himself. In recent years, you've decided to voice your opinions, especially about the religious right and what's happening in the fusion between religion and politics in this nation. What brought about that change? What made you decide to speak out?
During my long years as the anchor man of CBS Evening News, I was obligated to respect only the facts and not opinion. Hearing to that, I felt myself handicapped in speaking out about what I thought about what was going on in the activities of the far right.
Over the past decade or more, you've been a really grand supporter of the Interfaith Alliance. And, of course, a part of our work focuses on countering the religious right. I've often wondered, would you ever have imagined in prior years that this kind of agency and mission would claim so much of your attention?
No, I don't think I would have, although certainly my feelings about the place of religion in our lives and in our politics, indeed, in our daily lives, was not something that came to me late in life. I've thought about that for a great deal from many years ago when I was an altar boy in a newly found church, a Unitarian church in Houston, Texas, that my father organized.
In an earlier segment on today's program, I spoke about how I think religious pluralism in this land is in danger. You recently expressed concerns focused on an even more basic danger. There have been several occasions recently where you have said you think democracy is in great peril. Why do you say that?
In making that statement, I'm tying it to the state of our education in the country. I base everything I say from here on out on Thomas Jefferson's once statement that I sort of live by, and that is that a nation that expects to be ignorant and free expects what never can be. If we cannot teach our children properly to bring them into an intelligent adult age, we are endangering our very existence as a democracy.
Is there any event in recent days that alarmed you, that caused you to be angry, that made the light come on for you to make those kinds of statements?
There has been a general trend that has bothered me. The fact that religion has been brought so much to the fore of our political discussion these days bothers me. Mm-hmm. I don't think it belongs there. The case for a political movement or idea or individual is quite important to our democracy, quite clearly. I think it is well if we can look at toward them and say, well, they are faithful to their faith, but they are not trying to force their faith upon me as a fellow member of their democracy. That is most important in my considerations.
That's the late Walter Cronkite, who was my very first guest as we launched State of Belief Radio on January 15th, 2006. You can hear the entire program online at stateofbelief.com. It's an understatement to say that I've been looking forward to this next conversation. When this show began on January of 2006, I certainly had a lot to say on the topics of religion, government, and politics. I just had never said them on the radio before. The participation from day one of seasoned professionals was an essential part of a successful national broadcast. Joining me now are Thaler Pekar and Isaac Davy Aronson, who were there for that very first show. And I have to say, not only are they colleagues professionally. They are really good friends. I wish we were able to sit down face-to-face for this conversation, but I'm so grateful that you're both able to join me today. Thaler, Isaac, welcome to State of Belief.
So glad to be back.
So nice to be here, Walton.
So I want to ask each of you to just give a brief description of what you were doing professionally at the time State of Belief fell into your lives and why you felt it was important to do this work. And whoever wants to go first, go.
Taylor, I'm going to let you start on that one.
Professionally, I was advising the Interfaith Alliance on communications and working very closely with you, Welton, mm-hmm. on your writing and helping your voice to be heard, helping in the advocacy efforts of the organization throughout the country. I was also really looking forward to Air America Radio starting, and I remember pulling over to the side of the road at noon when Al Franken came on at the very start of Air America. So as a New Yorker, when Air America approached the Interfaith Alliance, I was the person who was local and was actually working face-to-face while you were in D.C. Mm-hmm. to help get the show up and started.
Well, and I had been working at Air America Radio, the sort of liberal talk radio network that began in 2004. I'd actually left that network to go to graduate school, and they contacted me and said, we're working with the Interfaith Alliance to set up this new program on the intersection of faith and politics, and would you be interested in coming back to help set it up? And when I had worked at Air America as a producer and as a host, we had been through the 2004 election, during which religion had played this huge role in that election, and it seemed to be playing a role only on one side. And there were a number of gay marriage amendments on the ballot in several states. Catholic bishops were recommending that John Kerry, the Democratic nominee, be denied communion. And it felt like this subject that progressives and liberals who had started this talk radio network, Air America, had a real problem talking about and understanding. And so the opportunity to do a radio program in which we would explore that intersection and figure out ways to talk about it and learn about it was just felt incredibly exciting and incredibly important to me.
You know, that just reminds me that we often talk, when we think about the beginning of the show, we often talk about how we wanted to promote civility. But a part of that often gets overlooked is that we wanted to model for people how you could talk civility about some of the issues that were being treated in really uncivil ways. I'd like for each of you also to talk about what you remember from those very, very first days that we were together.
Well, I would say that the thing that I remember from meeting you, Welton, for the first time to talk about possibly doing this program together, I will admit that as a secular New Yorker, I don't think I had ever had a conversation with a reverend before in my life, and I did not know what to expect. And I walked into the room to talk with you about it, and one of the first things you said to me was, "I should tell you that I don't know very much about radio." And I said, "Well, that's okay, because I don't know very much about religion." and from that point, we were off and running with ideas and discussing ways to do it. And I sort of immediately knew that it was going to be a great collaboration.
I think I said to you, actually, you were nervous.
Yes, I was.
And I think I said to you, if you'll just take on the responsibility of doing really good radio, I'll take care of religion. Thaler, what about you?
I remember being incredibly nervous when the first show aired. I remember my heart pounding and being nervous about the reaction, not because I was worried that people wouldn't understand a show about religion and politics, but because so many people were hungry for it, and we were hearing from people at the network and people at the Interfaith Alliance and people from all over the world how much they wanted this discussion to occur and how happy they were that somebody was about to talk about the importance of religion in the public sphere. And I just wanted to do right by them.
You know, I asked this really with a little bit of fear and trembling, but I know both of you are still so active in the kind of concerns that we've shared. But I have to admit, I miss what we were doing in those early days. Do you all miss it at all?
Sailor?
Well, you're still doing it, and I'm thrilled that you're still doing it. And I went back through all my old files, and I looked up the original show description, and you are still bringing listeners news and commentary from a religious perspective, tackling politics with a firm belief that the best way to secure religion, secure freedom for religion in America, is to secure freedom from religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm incredibly proud of the fact that you're still doing it. I'm struck by the fact that we talked about the religious right back then,
mm-hmm.
and now it seems like the religious right has just morphed into conservatives and the right,
mm-hmm.
And that's disturbing to me.
Yeah.
I went back and I was reading old emails and old commentary from listeners. And this was something, we were only on the air for 5 months, and somebody wrote in and said, "Now today, while listening to your show, I realize how we, atheist, agnostic, and believer alike, have been deceived by wicked people into hating and fighting each other, when in fact we are not enemies. We all seek to improve the world and make it a better and happier place in our unique ways. It is the work of evil and villainy, religious or secular in its orientation, that we oppose, not each other."
Hmm. Gosh, that's great.
Hmm. Yeah, I would absolutely echo what Thaler said, that it did feel that people were really hungry for it at the time. And so in that sense, I do miss that feeling that we had of collaborating to create something that would fill this seeming void on the airwaves of talking about religion and politics in this civil and exploratory and narrative way. And I would also echo what Thaler said, that I do feel there was a feeling at that time 10 years ago, and I too, looking back at scripts from that time, could see this, that we were tackling religion and politics at a time when those two things were melding together in a new and complicated and sometimes worrying way.
Mm-hmm.
And now, 10 years later, the landscape is very different, and I don't think it has evolved in necessarily the way we would have predicted. But certainly, the voices that at the time, 10 years ago, were much more on the fringes are now much more at the center.
Mm.
The conversation about religion and politics seems much louder and much more at the center now, and therefore perhaps harder to tackle in the civil way that we were doing then, and that you continue to do on State of Belief today.
Is it true that there were some voices at Air America at that time that were not quite in favor of a quote-unquote religious show joining the lineup?
I don't remember. Honestly, I do think that there may have been some hesitation along the lines of the sort of central tension that was always at Air America, mm-hmm. which was that we really wanted to do something new and different.
Mm-hmm.
And there were those who wanted essentially Air America to be just like right-wing talk radio, but coming from the left.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were those who said, no, we don't want to just be a mirror of right-wing radio. We want to do something new and different and more civil, perhaps, like, mm-hmm. like State of Belief. And so I think there may have been some hesitation by folks who thought, oh, well, there's all this religious right talk radio out there. Now we're just going to make a religious left show or something like that, which of course was not at all what we were doing. Right. And I think that any of those hesitations or concerns that were there at the time, I think were assuaged as we built the show and as it aired and people could hear that it really wasn't like anything else out there, nor was it some sort of mirror of something that was mm-hmm. out there.
Do you think we've seen progress toward inclusivity when it comes to progressives who are religious or who recognize the importance of spirituality in so many people's lives, even if they themselves are staunchly secular?
Oh, that's a big question. Thaler, do you want to jump on that first?
No.
We'll flip a coin in imagination and one of you go.
I would say, yes, we have seen progress. There's more of an understanding of Islam. There's more of an understanding of non-church-affiliated spiritualists. I think that there may be as much misunderstanding as there is increased understanding, too, so it balances itself out, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
I would agree. I think that there has been progress. And I think that a lot of that is due to the increased visibility and voices like yours, Welton, mm-hmm. and many other religious people and religious leaders who are either themselves progressives or who are committed to opening dialogue between secular Americans and religious Americans. I mean, I think that one of the most damaging things that the religious right accomplished over the last couple of generations, and this is something that I learned a great deal about by working with you, was to convince secular Americans that they, the religious right leaders, spoke for all Christians in America, and therefore sort of stoked this divide. And the fact that there are many more now, I think, visible progressive religious folks has increased that sense among secular Americans and progressive religious Americans that that divide is not as deep and wide as it has been made out to be by religious right leaders over the last several decades.
How do you think the landscape has changed in terms of religious liberty? How is the discussion different today than it was 10 years ago?
I was just looking at a script, I think, from 2007 from a program that we did. And one of the topics that we touched on was this increase in lawsuits mm-hmm. brought by conservative religious legal organizations that being able to, for instance, proselytize at your workplace was a matter of religious freedom mm-hmm. and that it couldn't be restricted. These were brand new, radical legal ideas at the time, and many of them were being shut down in court because mm-hmm. they were so radical at the time. But at the time that we were speaking about this, the idea that religious liberty might encompass essentially the right to proselytize or the right to discriminate was this sort of radical new idea. Now you see it in the very center of the presidential election, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That especially candidates, for instance, like Ted Cruz, really making it the centerpiece of their presidential campaign that religious liberty in America is under attack. And what religious liberty means is that you ought to be able to discriminate against people or proselytize wherever you like. So in that sense, I think the definition of religious liberty, at least as we understand it legally and politically, has really advanced and changed a lot in the last 10 years.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think we share an awareness that the issues we talked about are important issues. They were then, they are now. I'm sure you notice media figures and political figures missing the boat all the time, as well as other stories that we should cover on this show. So I want to take advantage of you both being with us today to ask, what would you like to see State of Belief focusing on in the year ahead? And I would encourage you to be as general or as specific as you'd like to be.
certainly the election. Also, pop culture. And the refugee crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would. I'm glad that you mentioned that you said the refugee crisis. I think that that the refugee crisis, both the refugee crisis in Europe and Syria, but also the refugee crisis on the southern border of the United States, mm-hmm. Where we have all of these unaccompanied minors traveling from South America. You know, religious figures in America have played a pivotal role in that, in arguing for giving these folks asylum, and it continues to be one of those flashpoints of what does one's religion dictate in these situations where people feel there is a conflict between safety and being kind to your fellow human.
Mm-hmm. I don't know whether you will remember this or not, but a lot of times when I was interviewing an author with a new book out, one of my favorite questions still is to ask, what did writing this book do to you? I'm curious about how your work with State of Belief in those early days has informed the way you view issues of religion, government, and politics today. Did the experience that we shared change you at all?
You know, it's so difficult to answer that question because the experience changed me in so many ways, both, you know, in terms of the way, yes, I view politics and policy, but also in terms of how I view my work as a journalist and also just personally. I learned a great deal and was and met so many people and interacted with so many people who came from walks of life that I had not had that much interaction with before joining State of Belief. Religion and worship was not a very big part of my life or my family, and the immense respect that I gained and knowledge that I gained and friendships that I gained through working on the show were incredibly personally important. And I would say just professionally, it continues to bother me in the journalism world that so much of, I suppose, what we might refer to as sort of coastal media continues often to talk about religious Americans and religious practice in a sort of anthropological way, to talk about, for instance, you know, practicing Baptists as though they were some sort of, you know, far off and fascinating tribe, right? that sort of language and that sort of way of viewing continues, I think, in a lot of journalism and media, and it is. And of course, it is condescending, and it breeds resentment, and it's not helpful to anyone. So that's something that I've carried with me in my professional life to try to look out for that, to stop myself certainly from doing it, and look out for it where it crops up.
Taylor, anything?
Again, I've been impacted every single day over falling in love with radio, falling in love with people who love radio, and understanding that people who work in radio, it's in their blood. But on the scale of what it's taught me about religion and politics and how it affects me day to day, if I hear about somebody doing good work at the intersection of religion and politics, I'm pretty sure that there's somebody who's also doing something bad. And if I hear about somebody doing something oppositional and something dangerous to the role of religion in politics, I feel assured that there's a counterforce, and that State of Belief will find that person and put them on the air, that person exists and that there's a movement to oppose it. It might not be as well heard and well known as it should be, but it does exist.
I don't remember when we started doing the green light, red light, caution light part of the show. But one thing that in listening to you all comes to my mind is that there are far less awards for the caution light today. Most of what we talk about have to do either with red lights or green lights.
Mm.
Any parting words, something you came all morning to say and haven't got to say?
I want to read a comment, and this is, we were on the air just over a year when this listener comment came in. A few weeks ago, I came upon a podcast called State of Belief and downloaded it on a whim. 2 weeks later, I'm a dedicated listener. As a pagan, I thank you. As a feminist, I thank you. And most of all, as a type 1 diabetic who has watched in dismay and anger stem cell research be held hostage by one religion, I thank you for the show.
Mm.
That's amazing. And I just want to say that it is nothing makes me happier than the fact that we can have this conversation today, 10 years later, on the program that we started, that it's still going strong. And I just wish you all the best for the next 10 years.
Thaler Pekar is a successful consultant who helms the communications firm Thaler Pekar and Partners. We worked together closely at Interfaith Alliance at the time we launched State of Belief. Isaac Davy Aronson was our first producer. He is now producer of The Rachel Maddow Show on MSNBC. I want to say to you all, because I think it's important to say, not only how much I appreciate this conversation, but I want to assure you, related to what Isaac just said, I want to assure you that the producer that we have right now is absolutely committed. He also came out of the Air America experience. Ray Kirstein believes in this program, gives everything he can to make it good, is helpful as you all were. The tradition is in good hands, and I want you to know that. Thaler, Isaac, thanks for your incredible work all those years ago, and thank you so much for sharing this anniversary with us on State of Belief Radio.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Great to speak with you, Welton.
Interfaith Alliance launched this show 10 years ago with the intention of reaching new audiences and extending the reach of a message of constitutional fidelity, religious inclusivity, and the positive role that faith can play in a secular society. While we always wish we could have done even more, I know we've done a lot toward achieving this goal. As we celebrate our 10th anniversary, I wanted to spend some time with Interfaith Alliance Executive Director Jack Moline to look back a bit, certainly, but to look ahead as well. And so, Jack, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
As always, it is a pleasure to talk with you, my friend, and let me begin by offering my congratulations on 10 extraordinary years of your broadcasting. You've really made a mark on talk radio done right, and I'm just so pleased and honored to be associated with you and with this program.
Well, Jack, thank you so much. That that opens the door for me to ask my first question, which is we wanted you today to commit to funding State of Belief for 10 more years.
It's a deal.
Oh, thanks, man. I would like to start by asking your awareness of State of Belief during your time as Interfaith Alliance and how you felt then and how you feel now when you're even more closely associated with it.
I look forward to State of Belief every week, Welton, because the conversations you have with the variety of religious figures and people who have something to say about religious freedom in this country is something that I can't get anywhere else. I hear the voices of people that I read, but I hear them in conversation, which I always find to be much more enlightening. And you ask the questions that I'm concerned about. So it's just something that has been a part of my life for all the years that it's been on. Now that I'm sitting in the chair that you used to occupy here at Interfaith Alliance, I'm more convinced than ever of the importance of State of Belief and why it is that we have to continue this. I mean, you were kind of ribbing me a little bit about funding it for another 10 years, but I hope I can fund it for another 100 years, although that means you and I both have to stay around for a long time. It is a voice without which too much of the debate would be silenced.
Hmm. Well, Jack, we've talked a lot before about the importance of a media presence for the agenda of the work of Interfaith Alliance. Share some of your thoughts about that.
Sure. You know, when I was a younger man, I used to believe that everything needed to be branded with the name of the denomination that I was working in, conservative Judaism. And as I got older, I came to realize that it's not always the brand that's necessary. It is the values, the principles, the accomplishments of the vision we have for our community. The same thing is true with the work of Interfaith Alliance. I am convinced that we have a unique voice in the fight for religious freedom. Unique because we approach it, as you know, as your listeners know, from a faith-based perspective. We are not opponents of religion and we're not opponents of government. We think that they are they can be mutually supportive and that they each have their role to play. It's less important to me that we accomplish what we accomplish with the brand name Interfaith Alliance than it is that we support and uphold the Constitution and particularly the protections of the First Amendment. Having said that, the best way to accomplish our message, which is about the healing power of religion and the protection of faith and freedom, is for us to be out in as many media outlets as possible. And that used to be newspapers and the occasional television interview. But now we have a comprehensive approach to social media, to broadcast, to print, and to anyone who will listen to us.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the importance of the message of Interfaith Alliance in relation to the present moment. And that means let's talk a bit about the State of the Union address this past week. There was one mention of religion, but a whole lot of talk about shared values and commitments. I'm really curious as to what, as the head of Interfaith Alliance, your thoughts are reflecting back on what the president said.
I was very moved by much of what President Obama said, and particularly since he was in a very difficult position, and in some ways the difficult position I'm in of not wanting to start naming candidates and calling them out for specific transgressions. We have demonized various groups in this country's history, and right now the emphasis seems to be on Muslims and people who are immigrating from Spanish-speaking countries. And I thought the president did a wonderful job of making it clear that we've gone down that road before, and it has always ended in regret and injury, and that we can avoid that this time if people stop trying to fearmonger and stop trying to use the cruelest of language to talk about problems that we are all trying to deal with collectively. So I heard, maybe it's just me, I heard the president's endorsement of what we as Interfaith Alliance have been trying to do all along, which is to protect this country's blessings and avoid the mistakes that we've made in the past by discriminating against the various groups because their message doesn't fit the need of the hour. I was just delighted to hear him call out the negative rhetoric that is being used by many candidates on both sides of the aisle in an attempt to get themselves elected to lead a government that they know will not act on the outrageous statements that they're making.
You know, Jack, I at one point was thinking as I was listening to the address, I hope that the segment that he did, that the president did on basic civics could be distributed to classrooms all across the United States, because, and you and I have talked about this before, but one of the real challenges that we face in doing the work we do is that we have a public that doesn't understand basically how government works and understand that you can talk about it without partisanship.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. Not only engaging in the conversation and engaging strenuously in the conversation, but the civic lessons of being involved on the very basic level by voting, which I think if I could declare it an American religious obligation, I would do it, except I wouldn't want to exclude people who are secularists. It's a right. Civic obligation that is as sacred as anything else we have in this country. But it also means considering engaging in the debate in constructive ways, and even in running for office if you think you have a better way of doing things that lifts up the values and the principles of the United States. You know, a former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor has a civics project that is trying to infuse a new sense of civic pride among school children in this country, and I'm hoping that the next generation will come to understand what the president articulated so well in the State of the Union.
Well, Jack, what is it going to take to return to some kind of civility in our public rhetoric? I really think that the lack of it is standing in the way of progress on almost every major issue that we face right now. How is it going to change?
Well, I think it requires three things, to be honest with you. First of all, it requires that every woman and man in this country search their heart and try to do away with the antagonism that they have toward people with whom they disagree politically. Until every individual can accomplish that, there's always going to be the danger that this antagonism will rear its head again. The second thing is that there has to be a repudiation of people seeking public office who are trying to exploit the fears and prejudices of their base populations. Until people band together with clean hands and a pure heart to chase those folks out of the public arena, we're going to have to contend with it. And the third is a broader thing, Welton. We live in a culture that that is sort of a Don Rickles culture. We take great delight in insulting people that we don't agree with, and then we laugh at the reaction. And when you're an entertainer, that's fine. When you're running for public office, you're undermining the values that have established this country as a beacon of light and hope to the rest of the world. So we need to look inside. We need to look at who's representing us, and we have to stop using entertainment as the basis for our politics.
Jack, what's at the top of your agenda at Interfaith Alliance for the year ahead?
At the top of our agenda, I think I would say it's always been at the top of our agenda. It's the strategy that changes from time to time. At the top of our agenda is a concern for the protection of freedoms for people in religious minorities and who have differing sexual orientations. And we hope to do that by taking a look at, as we've talked about before in this program, Religious Freedom Restoration Act imitators on the state level, and trying to help define for this country so that we can have a level playing field and an honest discussion exactly what religious freedom is and what a constitutional approach to religious freedom ought to be. We need to take that term back from the religious right and define it more broadly rather than narrowly and selfishly as the religious right is attempting to do. That's our task for the coming year.
Jack, just in case someone is listening for the first time or for the first time hearing Interfaith Alliance, how can listeners get involved in this important work?
Well, open up your computer, type in www.interfaithalliance.org, and when that homepage comes up, there's a big donate button. Click on it and give us all your money.
Rabbi Jack Moline is the Executive Director of Interfaith Alliance. In addition to being a longtime friend, Jack has long been an enthusiastic booster of State of Belief Radio, and I am grateful for his enthusiasm about it. There have been moments in the past 10 years that his belief in the importance of this show, as well as the enthusiasm of others at the Alliance, was the only thing standing between us and an end to this program. Jack, I thank you so much for that constant support, and I thank you for being with us again on State of Belief Radio, and I look forward to our conversations that will dot the days of this year.
Sounds great, Welton.
Before we go, I want to share a few very personal words with you. 10 years ago, on January 15th, State of Belief aired for the first time on Air America Radio. For me personally, and as the leader of Interfaith Alliance, the launch of this new initiative generated excitement, commitment, hope, and anxiety. In retrospect, these 10 years have been marked by fulfillment, surprise, affirmation, and perpetual struggles with the need for financial support. I remember vividly sitting down behind the microphone in an Air America studio for the first time, feeling a swarm of butterflies in my stomach as I listened to sounds of brass from Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, with which the program begins, and speaking my first words as the host of the show. Little did I know that I was beginning an incredibly satisfying and meaningful long-term relationship with a very faithful audience. My dear friend Walter Cronkite, who meant so much to Interfaith Alliance, was my first guest on State of Belief. Honestly, he seemed as excited as I felt. Given the love and respect that Walter, known as the most trusted man in America, evoked, our first recording session attracted a sizable crowd surrounding our studio to see and hear this icon of integrity. Interfaith Alliance had and has something important to say to America. That was and is my conviction. I wanted this weekly program to demonstrate a public voice of religion devoted to reporting objectively, programming with inclusivity, and modeling civility. I felt it was important to stand in the intersection of religion, politics, and government, and from that vantage point, to speak of what we saw, heard, and thought. In negotiating a contract with the officials at Air America, I insisted on guaranteed independence for this show to assure that from our microphone there would come no shouting, anger, partisanship, or prejudice. Rather, information, inspiration, conversations, and pluralism that could benefit the nation and demonstrate the positive aspects of religion. Diversity has been an essential value and a primary criterion in programming for State of Belief. Our guests have come from a variety of political perspectives, most religions that have a home in the United States, as well as atheists, nuns, humanists, and avowed secularists. Now, let me be specific. More than once, I have spoken to Ted Kennedy and to Pat Buchanan on State of Belief. Civil conversations have involved leaders from the religious right and spokespersons from the Secular Coalition and the American Humanist Association. Representatives of the plethora of world religions have been regular contributors to State of Belief. Additionally, our passion for pluralism has taken us into the international community as well as neighborhoods just down the street. Our show has been strengthened and our vision broadened by eyewitness accounts of crises from Vietnam, Ukraine, Russia, the Vatican, France, Switzerland, and Germany, among others. Listeners to State of Belief reflect the diversity of the show's guests. We hear regularly from fervent followers of religion, people who want nothing to do with religion, though they know the important role that religion plays in this nation, people angry at religion, and to my surprise, people who have left religion but want to find a place at which they can respect religion again. Recently, I was in Santa Fe, New Mexico, to contribute to a panel discussion on religious freedom. As I walked out of a restaurant in town, a woman followed me to ask, "Aren't you Welton Gaddy?" And when I said yes, she began to tell me about the importance of State of Belief and the gratitude that she and her friends felt for this show. Similarly, a man on a plane identified me by my voice and encouraged me with his comments about his loyalty as a listener. Not long ago, on a visit to the Smithsonian, a curator stopped me to thank me for the gift of State of Belief. Such comments thrill as well as humble all of us at State of Belief and give us energy and encouragement sufficient to keep us doing what we do. I must confess that sometimes compliments from our listeners have stung me. I have a stack of mail from people who have written, "I didn't know a minister could be reasonable. I've not been in a church for over 20 years, but you make me want to try it again. And I listen to State of Belief every Sunday night while sitting in my hot tub." Yes, I'm glad that listeners trust the integrity of our show, but such comments also make me aware of the bad reputation that religion has among many people, and the assumption that a religious leader will be biased, uncivil, and unhelpful. I am delighted that as many people who have no religion as people who have some relationship with religion appreciate State of Belief as a program that cares about, seeks to address all of life. Topics addressed on State of Belief literally cover the worlds of tragedy and joy, celebrations and grief, conflict and peace, as well as always, always the meaning and importance of religious freedom, the cornerstone of our democracy and the best friend that religion in the public sector has ever had. Consequently, the archives of State of Belief contain comments that are profound, historical, shocking, and incredible. They provide insights into the development of progressive religion in our nation. Do I have a favorite show? No. I just have an incredible collection of great experiences. Memories of specific interviews tend to lodge in my mind for very specific, though very different reasons. Often, because of the name of our radio show, some guests assume that they're going on just another stereotypical religious radio show. They are surprised to realize that our audience has little patience for their narrow thoughts and offensive comments. Several times, such a situation has made for memorable interviews. In a conversation with the chaplain of the United States Senate, I inquired about the nature of his counsel to U.S. senators struggling with critical votes. The chaplain stunned me when he told me that he encourages senators to do what Jesus would want them to do. When I asked how he responded to senators who are not Christians, he explained casually that he just sends them to another religious leader. Wow. On another occasion, my jaw dropped open when a leader from the Fellowship of Christian Athletes insisted that Christian athletes have been proven to be superior in their athletic skills to non-Christian athletes. Strong emotions have pervaded some of our interviews and prompted tears. After the shootings at Virginia Tech, we convened a panel to talk about guns, death, grief, and more. While doing that show, it felt to me as if the airwaves were laced with compassion and grief and comfort. Long before it was popular to talk about same-gender marriage, we aired on State of Belief a conversation between religious leaders who held very different opinions on this issue. I was deeply moved by the civility with which that conversation unfolded and gratified that our listeners were exposed to mutual understanding, respect for differences, and support for equality and justice. Silence and sobs were as powerful as the commentary in two different conversations on State of Belief, one with Judy Shepherd, a mother whose gay son was murdered, and a colleague with whom I worked diligently to get Congress to pass a meaningful hate crimes law, and later with my friend and superior businessman Mitchell Gold, whose book entitled Crisis documents the abuse inflicted on young people in the LGBTQ community. Lots of interviews have been enjoyable as well as meaningful, like talking with Sister Simone Campbell from her seat on the road during her Nuns on the Bus travels. A sense of awe filled me as I spoke with Ted Sorensen and verified his contribution to writing the speech on religion and presidential decision-making for President John F. Kennedy. Every interview with John Meacham has been inspiring as well as enlightening. The same can be said about unforgettable conversations with Emmy Award-winning actress Judith Light and the popular country music singer Shelley Blitzer Wright. And I remember recording a show with Greg LaBelle one evening about 11:30, riding in the back seat of a rental car in Charlotte, North Carolina, where we were covering the Democratic National Convention. At no point in this past decade has it been easy to finance this important media endeavor. We could not have launched State of Belief without the help of Alex Forger, a former board member of Interfaith Alliance, who found donors interested in a radio broadcast committed to protecting freedom, advocating civility, strengthening democracy, and modeling religious integrity. Financial contributions from our listeners continue to be a strong base of support for us. In an extremely tight financial time, Auburn Seminary generously gave us money to keep us on the air. The school uses State of Belief as a model for people studying broadcast journalism. And, of course, Interfaith Alliance has continued to budget money and devote staff time to be sure that this program stays alive. And I'm happy to tell you that the new executive at Interfaith Alliance, Rabbi Jack Moline, shares the same passion for State of Belief as that which fills his predecessor. But, you know, we can no more continue this show without listeners than we can without sufficient financial support from our listeners. This 10th anniversary of State of Belief is a good time for our faithful listeners to demonstrate tangible support for this show so we can continue a unique radio experience that in a society that now seems bent toward negativity, screaming, and incivility, offers a sane, civil voice that promotes the kind of mutual understanding and respect that assure a vibrant democracy and religion with integrity. Obviously, I have written this piece from a first-person singular perspective, but surely you know that State of Belief is a collaborative production. It always has been, and it always will be. For several weeks prior to the launch of State of Belief, my good friend Thaler Pekar, a superb consultant, along with the show's first producer, Isaac Davey Aronson, looked at every dimension of this new endeavor, devoted to assuring a new public voice that would model the message of Interfaith Alliance. Subsequent producers of State of Belief, Brandon McDonald and Julie Meshack, have brought impressive skills to our show, assuring continuation of a high-quality broadcast. Our current producer of State of Belief, Ray Kirstein, is singularly committed to producing a radio show that is technically sound and substantially educational, provocative, and inspirational, a show that is characterized best by the descriptive terms that we have used since our first days on the air, religion and radio done differently. Honestly, friends, over the past 10 years, I cannot remember a time when the microphone went live and we began to tape State of Belief that I didn't feel excitement and promise regarding the way in which this radio show could make our country better. I am grateful for all who give to us, listen to us, and provide encouragement to us. It's great to be a part of a radio program that tries to do over airwaves what at the end of every broadcast I call on our listeners to do through personal relationships. You all take care of each other. To me, that's State of Belief. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Every time I say those words, I wish we had more time. There are always stories untold, topics untouched, and conversations unheard. But for 10 years, we've been able to look forward to continue the conversation in the following week, and that's not about to change. The community that has grown around State of Belief Radio is active all week long online, too. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and engage in the discussion. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a sincere thank you. I think I've already said that before, but I can't say it enough. If you've heard something on this week's show that you think would be helpful to someone you know, please share it with them. Direct them to stateofbelief.com where they'll find full episodes, an in-depth archive, extended interviews, transcripts, and links mentioned in the show. From day one, State of Belief is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to tune in next week as we begin our 11th year for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.